Welcome to the Urban Legends Hotline, where we investigate the mysterious tales of your hometowns and stories passed through the old lockered halls of your schools to get to the haunted heart of the urban legends that you grew up hearing and maybe even telling. This week, we are covering the claim that the average human swallows 8 spiders a year in their sleep. I'm your host, Chelsea Weber-Smith, and from one friend of a friend to another, this is American Hysteria.
Hi, Chelsea and American Hysteria. So something I would love to learn more about, I'm sure many of your listeners remember, for those of you old enough, back in the late 90s and early 2000s, when email was like first becoming a big thing, and email chains would go around with lists of facts. And the one that always really got me was that you swallow so many spiders a year. And it's embarrassing to admit that I believed that for way too long and thought that was true. So what I would be curious to know is, where does that urban legend come from that you swallow spiders? And even where do these lists come from? Thank you so much. I look forward to learning about it if you choose to investigate it. Thanks.
My greatest little fear is, you guessed it, spiders. Those skittering little vampires that mummify their insect prey before sucking them dry. If I see a spider, I suddenly feel that they are all over my body. And if I run into a spider web, you bet I am bellowing and stomping, aggressively trying to brush off that phantom arachnid. So when, as a kid, I heard that the average person swallows 8 spiders a year in their sleep, this was a living, breathing nightmare. Making this episode felt like it should be some kind of exposure therapy, and yet I'm not sure that I've been able to even begin to get over my terror. So first thing, let's get this out of the way. We do not, on average, swallow 8 spiders a year in our sleep. We do not, on average, swallow any spiders in our sleep. And the explanation for that is pretty simple. Spiders, like people, are hardwired to avoid danger. And despite the idea that our open mouths are these perfect dark little caves that a spider would love to take up residence in, experts will tell you that they are in no way attracted to a place like that. First of all, they are highly sensitive to vibrations. It's a large part of how they navigate the world. To them, we appear as a giant heaving mass, our mouths a wet windstorm. We are at once like an earthquake, a tornado, and an enormous unstable boulder. We are also devoid of any bugs, hopefully, that might attract them. So unless a spider has developed a psyche advanced enough to develop a Freudian death wish, we're good. And if they have, well, we have bigger problems. Now, before you email me to tell me that you have indeed awoken in this dire situation, I'm not saying that a spider could never, ever make its way into a sleeping mouth, okay? But if it has happened to you, you have truly beat the odds. You are an enigma. Congratulations? Let me be perfectly clear. Despite my own petrification, I am no spider killer. I believe that you cannot just kill what you fear, because fear isn't always rational. Spiders are absolutely vital to our ecosystem. Lest we become overrun by trillions of insects absolutely run amok. They are also far less dangerous to humans than we think. There are almost no spider-related deaths, 3 a year in the United States. And bites from those that can cause significant harm are also incredibly rare. though they may be both harmless and heroic, arachnophobia is one of the most common fears among both American adults and children. In one study of 200 elementary school-aged children, 62% believed that spiders are dangerous to humans, especially when we are asleep. For this episode, we're not only going to look at the wild 90s internet story behind the spread of this runaway myth, but we'll also look at other urban legends about spiders, surprising theories about the origins of arachnophobia, newspaper articles about spiders swallowed in centuries past, and modern pop culture moments that may have contributed to the tale. We'll try to see what we can find about the origins of this extremely common false fact to find out why, despite decades of debunking, this urban legend continues to hang around like a cobweb in our American haunted house. Before we get into our specific spider-swallowing story today, let's look at a handful of other arachnid-related urban legends that may have informed this decades-long viral false party fact. Perhaps you'll remember this classic teenage tale from the 1950s. 16-year-old Mary Jane had just gotten back from the salon, sporting her hip new hairdo that she was sure would make all the girls at school envy her and make all the boys think she was absolutely neato. It wasn't an easy look to keep up. Everyone called it the beehive. At the salon, they called it a bouffant. But one thing was for sure. Every girl at her high school wanted to get her hair the tallest. The hairstylist told her that washing her beehive would ruin the look. So for months, she kept ratting it herself, going through bottles of hairspray and wrapping up her bouffant whenever she went to sleep. One day in class, Mary Jane felt faint, and a trickle of blood ran down the back of her neck. When she passed out on the floor of the classroom, she was sent to the nurse's office, who noticed a black widow spider crawling through her hairdo. Upon inspection, she found a whole nest of black widows living in her beehive. And she saw that Mary Jane had already been bitten several times. Not long after, she succumbed to the venom and died. I bet you'll also remember this piece of contemporary folklore, popular enough to make it into the third book of the Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark series from the 90s, as well as the more recent movie. Here's author Alvin Schwartz's own retelling. While Ruth slept, a spider crawled across her face. It stopped for several minutes on her left cheek and then went on its way. "What is this red spot on my cheek?" she asked her mother the next morning. "Looks like a spider bite," her mother said. "It'll go away, just don't scratch it." Soon, the small red spot grew into a small red boil. "Look at it now," Ruth said. "It's getting bigger. It's sore." "Sometimes that happens," her mother said. "It's coming to a head." A few days later, the boil was even larger. "Look at it now," Ruth said. "It hurts and it's ugly." "We'll have to have the doctor look at it," her mother said. "Maybe it's infected." But the doctor couldn't see Ruth until the next day. That night, Ruth took a hot bath. As she soaked herself, the boil burst. Out poured a swarm of tiny spiders from the eggs their mother had laid in her cheek. Don't worry, though I know you still will. According to experts, spiders do not find human skin a suitable place to lay their eggs, period. But there are other urban legends that involve the breaching of the human body by the eggs and infants of these eight-legged freaks. We covered this one briefly in our second ever episode, Poison Halloween Candy, from 2018.
When you try some soft and juicy bubble yum,
bubble yum,
a flavor fiend will be there wanting some.
Is bubble yum bubblegum soft to chew?
Really soft and juicy too.
And the flavor lasts a long time?
Sure does.
Does it last this long?
Longer.
This long?
Longer.
How long does bubble yum's flavor last?
If we travel back to the year 1976, we'd find ourselves smack in the middle of a massive childhood revolution in chewing gum. In a world of hard sticks that had to be chewed and chewed until the jaws of millions of children ached, after an era of horrific sugar-free gum pushed by parents and moral nutrition crusaders, Bubble Yum came on the scene to blow it all up. This new sugar-forward gum was super soft, straight out of the pack, and provided kids with bigger bubbles than ever before, becoming so beloved that while the product accounted for just 10% of chewing gum sales in 1970, by 1978, that number skyrocketed to 33%. Sales far exceeded corporate expectations, forcing their parent company, Lifesavers, to scale back their marketing budget to attempt to keep up with the growing demand. When it came to Bubble Yum, there were immediate adolescent theories about how they were able to make a candy so soft and squishy. And since the ingredients were a tightly held secret, it left quite a bit of room for sordid speculation. Soon, a nasty little tale began skipping from school to school in New York City, and then quickly spread to other parts of the country. One that claimed that the secret ingredient in everyone's newest obsession were those squishy, soft, springy spider eggs that you see mummified to walls in the darkest corners of summer. Trying to understand the mechanics of this potential corporate scandal myself, I pictured some evil factory farming operation where millions and millions of spiders are inhumanely bred and kept prisoner in tiny terrariums, forced to lay eggs in thousands of darkened barns somewhere in rural America. It's ridiculous, of course, but children have always tended to lack my superior critical thinking skills. As the legend continued to grow, newspaper reporters began interviewing preteen and teenage subjects, trying to track down the source of these rumors. 13-year-old Teresa Cossia told a reporter, quote, "My friends heard a little boy bit into a piece of bubble yum containing baby spiders from hatched eggs." Another 13-year-old, Eric Sains, told the same reporter that, quote, "My sister told me that her friends heard a little girl died from the spider eggs in the gum." According to the article, 11-year-old Donna Potts said that, quote, "Someone told my friend that a boy fell asleep with bubble yum in his mouth, and when he woke up, there were spiders in it." Another version told of a girl waking up with webs all over her face. As sales began to noticeably decline in the Northeast, where the rumor was most potent, Lifesavers asked the FDA to address these defamatory claims. After debunking the rumor, a spokesman from the agency strangely stated,
"I don't even know what spider eggs look like."
To which I say, babe, get out of that office and touch some grass. When the FDA analysis somehow failed to reach the ears of America's youth, the Lifesaver company tried to stop the bleeding of this venomous PR disaster by shelling out no less than $100,000, or more than $500,000 today, to take out full-page ads in newspapers all over the country. Since they didn't want the ad to backfire and spread the salacious tale even farther, the ads did not say anything about spider eggs specifically, but instead generalized about viral rumors, explaining the rigorous safety standards that every piece of bubble yum had to pass. Many schools also received copies in flyer form to pass out for students to take home. Targeted at parents they hoped would squash the myth for them, each ad featured the bold title, "Someone is telling your kids very bad lies about a very good gum." Okay, so check this out and tell me, is this something? Someone is telling your kids very bad lies about a very good gum. Anyway, this newspaper PR campaign actually worked. Probably because at the end of the day, kids just really wanted to chew that bubble yum and were happy to return to their bubble snapping gaiety. And the bubble gum division of the Lifesavers company would make a pretty full recovery. But the idea that you could swallow hidden spider eggs that could hatch in your stomach with baby spiders then crawling out of your sleeping mouth, let's just say that's a pretty sticky story that baby boomers have probably never quite forgotten. So now let's return to our titular legend that human beings on average swallow 8 spiders a year in our sleep to see if we can get some insight into the origins of this contemporary myth. As I clicked through various message boards on the topic, I read some offhand comments from anonymous users claiming that they had heard some version of this fact going back as far as the 1970s. But in terms of concrete evidence of where this story began, there is absolutely no reference to it on newspapers.com or online before the early 1990s. In terms of the internet, this would make sense, since the early web was unrecognizable to the one we know today, made of primitive, anonymous, topic-specific message boards. Of course, the most popular urban legend debunking site, Snopes, was on the case all the way back in 2001. After linking to a Scientific American article that easily disproved the claim, co-creator David Mickelson explained what he discovered in his quest for answers. Quote,
"In a 1993 PC Professional article, columnist Lisa Holst wrote about the ubiquitous list of quote-unquote facts that were circulating via email, and how readily they were accepted as truthful by gullible recipients. To demonstrate her point, Holst offered her own made-up list of equally ridiculous quote-unquote facts, among which was the statistic cited above about the average person swallowing 8 spiders per year, which she took from a collection of common misbeliefs printed in a 1954 book on insect folklore. In a delicious irony, Holst's propagation of this false quote-unquote fact has spurred it into becoming one of the most widely circulated bits of misinformation to be found on the internet."
This is a great story, one that easily demonstrates how our attempts at pointing out false information can tragically spur on even more misinformation, something we are all probably familiar with by now. But you see, there is a little problem with this bit of straightforward debunking. Urban legend enthusiasts who took the time to fact check the ultimate fact checkers found that something very strange was going on. The claims that Snopes were making about the origins of this story were simply not adding up. Starting back in 2011, 10 years after Snopes posted their article, collaborative detective work began from members of the message board skeptics.stackexchange.com, members of the subreddit Unsolved Mysteries, and eventually popular YouTuber Lamino. These truth hounds got their hands on copies of the obscure but real 1954 book Insect Fact and Folklore. But when they turned to page 24, which was marked down in Snopes' cited sources, it contained nothing about swallowing spiders, and the rest of the book didn't either. Then they moved on to finding that magazine, PC Professional, that allegedly contained that listicle of viral false facts created by that columnist, her full name listed in the sources cited as Lisa Birgit Holst. The publication itself didn't seem to exist in the time frame given by Snopes, except in obscure forms in various non-English speaking countries. And most of these were not even in publication until after the January 1993 date given by Snopes in their cited sources. The only possible magazine that fit the parameters was located in Germany by YouTuber Lamino, which he also identified as the most likely country of origin for the last name Holst. He was able to locate a copy in the online archives of a German library, which sent him a scanned copy of page 71 from the January 1993 issue. But there was no trace of any spider-related content whatsoever. Also missing was anything at all by a writer named Lisa Birgit Holst. In fact, there was no trace of any journalistic writing by anyone with that name, period. When these sleuths continued their investigation, the rabbit hole, or rather, the spider hole, went much deeper. A particularly keen user noticed that Lisa Birgit Holst was actually an anagram that, when rearranged, spelled out a big troll. And that was the first sign that this was no mistake. This was an intentional act. More after this. And now, back to the show.
It spans the globe like a superhighway. It is called Internet. The net to longtime users.
Internet is a whole group of networks.
The net is made up of some 12,000 individual computer networks, but nowadays just about anyone with a computer and a modem can join in, usually for a nominal fee.
Designed to put vast amounts of information at users' fingertips.
What we call online trolling has been around since the early days of the accessible internet, taking its name not from the ugly under-the-bridge creature of fairy tales, but from the fishing term trolling, a method where bait on a fishing line is pulled through the water by a slow-moving boat or cast and immediately reeled in, making that bait seem more alive and causing the fish to follow it in droves. Back in the 90s, before the tactics practitioners turned into the cruel cave-dwelling creatures we know today, trolling was a lot more innocent, all about getting an easy one over on the newbies. Usenet was the earliest popular system of forums found on the internet, and one community called alt.folklore.urban was a place for urban legend enthusiasts, and they dealt with noobs by creating posts that purposefully contained misinformation, whether that be incorrect quotations, false facts, or topics that had already been dissected to death, knowing that inexperienced users would respond seriously with corrections, outing themselves as an outsider, leading to a light bit of humorous hazing. Internet historians actually point to this Usenet group, alt.folklore.urban, as the origin place of trolling as we know it. They also give credit to who they consider to be one of the first true internet trolls, known on the forum by the username Snopes.
In a way, it's kind of a mysterious process because, you know, most urban legends, you can never trace them back to a source, not a source in a sense of where this really happened, but how they began in the first place. It, you know, it seems to be a very collaborative process where somebody somewhere comes up with the germ of a story, mm-hmm. somehow either making it up, misremembering something, being inspired by something, and it goes through many hands and it's shaped and it's formed until somehow it just reaches this sort of perfect state where it stops changing except for the details of, you know, time and locale. How it starts and gets shaped and molded into that is kind of mysterious. It's like
by 1995, David Mickelson, aka Snopes, and his wife Barbara, both researchers and folklore obsessives, launched the website we know today as the most popular place to read debunkings of everything from urban legends to conspiracy theories to oft-repeated false facts. But it seemed that, even after 6 years as a respected sociological investigator, David still had a passion for trolling and a passion for demonstrating how myths spread when no one bothers to fact-check the authoritative websites that claim to be telling the truth. You can now find on the Snopes website a page called The Repository of Lost Legends, which keen listeners may have immediately identified as an acronym that spells out TROLL. Here you'll find a list of prank legends and prank debunkings meant to illustrate his point about the need for rigorous fact-checking. In one example, David claims that the origin of the term mobile home is actually not about the ability to move the residence, but because they were actually created in Mobile, Alabama. In another, he takes on two existing urban legends about Kentucky Fried Chicken. The first legend claims that the company started going by KFC because the FDA told them they could no longer use the word chicken in their name, citing their use of horrific genetic engineering that created birds with no beaks or feathers and a surplus of legs. The second legend said the company cut out the word fried in a time when people were growing more health conscious and less likely to consume fried fast food. In David's made-up debunking, he states that the name change was actually due to an expensive legal battle with the Commonwealth of Kentucky that was so broke they trademarked their state name, meaning that from 1990 on, Kentucky Fried Chicken would be forced to pay to use the name that they had had since the 1950s. This is totally bogus. Most famously, the Repository of Lost Legends contains a published post that claims that the horse from the 1950s comedy show Mr. Ed was actually played by a well-trained zebra. And because of the fact that TV was in black and white in the early 1950s, no one could tell the difference. Ridiculous and untrue, of course, but I've come across people on forums who are continuing to repeat this tale, even recently. So in terms of our spider legend, this means that in 2001, Snopes fully made up the page of that 1954 insect folklore book that they claimed was the earliest reference they could find to this bit of misinformation. They also created a fake columnist who wrote a fake article debunking a list of fake facts in order to shine a light on internet users' gullibility. They also made up the fake story that this article actually turned the false spider fact into one of the most common myths found online in what they called a delicious irony. And so, Snopes may have debunked the actual myth itself while simultaneously creating a new myth about the origins of the myth, one that has been reprinted as truth hundreds or maybe thousands of times. Are you following me? A whole two decades later, Snopes finally copped to their complicated prank.
This quote-unquote Easter egg was created over 20 years ago, in April of 2001, as a wink to our longtime readers who were familiar with the trolling we engaged in during the early days of the internet.
Snopes has yet to find the true origin of this rumor, and they clarified that though some have speculated that their article actually created the myth in 2001, there is a real listicle from The Guardian in 1999 called 50 Top Pieces of Trivia that contain the false fact, meaning that it all had to go farther back than their trolling. To this day, Snopes continues to be the premier fact-checking site, and one that I generally do trust, along with their millions of other users. But in terms of our king troll, David Mickelson, he left Snopes in 2021 after it was discovered that he plagiarized a shit ton of his articles. After I was able to sort all that out, I still wanted to locate the actual origin story of how this false fact was created and spread. I was able to access the archives of all available Usenet groups from the 1990s, including alt.folklore.urban, and it was there that I found the earliest online reference to the story. A question posted on the forum from one David Iscatafish on December 2nd, 1993, asked about our legend with a slight variation.
All right, when I hear the same urban legend from three people in a week, it's time to post. Where on earth did the average American swallows an average of three spiders in their sleep every year urban legend come from? Is this documented? Should I put on a surgical mask before I fall asleep every night? Are they building webs in my stomach? What's the deal here?
One Redditor also investigating the origins of this legend was able to go back even farther, finding an earlier reference deep in the archives of the Cornell Engineer student paper. Published in April 1992, the tongue-in-cheek article called Things to Stress Over lists a variety of creative worries she hoped to pass on to the other students of Cornell. The very first one, a variation of our urban legend. Quote, the average person swallows eight spiders while sleeping in their lifetime. What if all eight show up tonight? Now, I contacted the writer of this article to see if I could glean any insight about whether this was something she made up or something that had already been going around. But as of this recording, she has not responded to my odd little inquiry. We may not be able to find the direct source of this tale, but as our listener who called into our hotline remembered, we do know that lists of fun or surprising or shocking facts often made the rounds in email chain letters by anonymous authors, just like many other urban legends that came in the form of warnings. But other, far more professional lists of these fun facts existed as well.
The all-natural taste of Snapple beverages is so good, it makes some people forget themselves. Merrily, merrily. Snapple, made from the best stuff on earth.
We can actually look to the king of 90s fake health beverages to discover one of the ways I believe this false fact spread so widely. Just a year after Snopes helped popularize the spider myth with their proto-trolling, the Snapple company seemed to have fully missed the memo when their marketing team premiered Snapple Real Facts, printing pieces of true trivia inside of their bottle caps. Real fact number 31 went like this. The average human will eat an average of 8 spiders a year while asleep. Snapple has also spread a couple dozen other false or misleading facts on their bottle caps, such as number 36, a duck's quack does not echo, and number 77, no piece of paper can be folded in half more than 7 times. These quippy myths are examples of what contemptible author Norman Mailer called factoids in his 1973 biography of Marilyn Monroe. Frustrated at a previous over-dramatized and inaccurate biography of the starlet, which contained many irresistible made-up facts, he defined the new term as, quote, facts that have no existence before appearing in a magazine or newspaper, creations of which are not so much lies as a product to manipulate emotion. The added suffix of oid means to resemble. These are pieces of information that resemble facts. It walks like a fact and talks like a fact, but it ain't a fact. Ironically, the usage of the term factoid has changed over the last 50 years into a definition that you and I are more likely to be familiar with. In the 80s and 90s, CNN effectively redefined a factoid as, quote, a little-known bit of information, trivial but interesting data. They began broadcasting these little pieces of trivial trivia as a gimmick, helping to change the definition to pretty much the opposite of its original meaning. So even the word originally meaning a false fact has come to mean a true fact. We are more mixed up than a milkshake. Now, the following is just a small and pretty unimportant thing, but I think it illustrates how difficult it can be to get the facts right. Myth debunking websites and articles that have taken on the spider eggs in bubblegum urban legend almost always write erroneously that the title of those full-page ads was "Somebody is telling very bad lies about a very good product," instead of the actual title "Someone is telling your kids very bad lies about a very good gum." If you were to return to our poison Halloween candy episode, you would hear me say the wrong title because I was using Snopes, which contains, unintentionally I'm sure, the wrong version of the title. Almost every other article that tells the story of spider eggs in bubble yum also makes this mistake. And that's why you shouldn't believe everything that the debunkers tell you, including me. We are often relying on other debunkers, who are, of course, only human and bound to make mistakes. Though I promise I'm doing my best, I know for a fact I have taken factoids as facts, and I've passed on false information unintentionally as well. All we can do is try our best. More after this. And now, back to the show. Now, I think it's time we switch our focus again and look at some spider-swallowing moments in popular entertainment around the time that the legend gained steam, which might have influenced its creation or spread. There is certainly no lack of arachnophobic content in American popular culture. Movies like Tarantula and Earth vs. the Spider have been around since the 1950s. But there is a shocking dearth of spider-in-mouth imagery. In my seeking, I saw a comment on Reddit that referred to a scene from the 1990 comedy horror movie Arachnophobia, where a spider crawls out of a character's dead mouth. And since that is just a couple years before the legend first appeared in print, I thought, hot diggity dog, I might be onto something. So for you, dear listeners, I reluctantly rented the movie and skimmed through it as quickly as possible, watching through the tiniest spaces between my fingers, shoulders hunched, and my face half tucked into the collar of my shirt. When I finally found the scene in question, I discovered that the spider did not crawl out of his mouth, but instead crawled out of his nose. And to that Redditor who sent me on this traumatic wild spider chase, I say, why I oughta. The only piece of popular culture I could find that may have possibly contributed to this legend was the 1981 slasher Deadly Blessing, directed by the dearly departed Wes Craven and starring Sharon Stone in her first major role. In one scene, her sleeping mouth is opened by a sinister supernatural being, and a large spider falls into it, causing her to awake in a fright and discover it was all a bad dream. Or was it? Okay, that was pretty much a bust, so I think we need to explore a past far more distant than the 90s internet and 80s horror movies. That's right. It's time for my favorite part of the Urban Legends Hotline, a trip over to newspapers.com to shuffle through the archives to see if there are any major spider-swallowing stories over the last 300 years that could have stuck around like old cobwebs in the corners of the American zeitgeist.
There is a spider in my dreams, long and silent is his name. Cold as lightning is his smile, final is his sting. His curse is deep as seven skies. Boys, I wouldn't tell you lies. The legends say he never sleeps and he's never hungry long.
As I began to scour the archives, I quickly discovered that in the late 1800s and early 1900s, people seemed to be accidentally swallowing spiders a lot, or at least thinking they were swallowing spiders, and believing wholeheartedly that it was a potentially deadly experience. It's not, by the way. Spider experts will tell you that it's almost impossible for a spider to bite you from inside. And if it did, it would be extremely unlikely for you to meet the fates of the following arachnophobic Americans. In the summer of 1884, what the papers called a
plague of black spiders
hit Crawford County, Illinois, in which
several persons have been bitten.
According to the reports, reprinted all over the country,
only one death has resulted, the victim swallowing a spider while drinking from a jug. Many of these spiders are of enormous size.
Another article out of the Midwest from June of 1897 was titled,
A Kentucky Woman Experiences Awful Torture from a Peculiar Mishap,
and went like this.
Mrs. Peter Party met with a most peculiar and almost fatal accident yesterday. She arose before daylight to get a drink of water. In drinking, she swallowed a small black water spider that had dropped into the bucket during the night. She felt the insect going down her throat, but did not know what it was. In an hour or two, she became nauseated and threw up the spider, but not until it had bitten her repeatedly internally. The poison from the bites soon spread throughout her system, and her condition became alarming. Her flesh puffed up in rolls and ridges, her ears swelled so tightly that the blood oozed through the skin, while her tongue swelled till she almost suffocated. Physicians worked for several hours administering all antidotes known, and finally pulled her through, and she is now convalescent.
Articles about small children dying from swallowing spiders were also popular at the turn of the century. Here is one such report from July of 1909.
A spider swallowed by Catherine Deegan, the 6-year-old daughter of H.C. Deegan of Louisville, Kentucky, is believed to have caused the little girl's death, which occurred early in the morning. At dinner, she ate a saucer of strawberries, and while eating the fruit, remarked at the table that she, quote, thought she had swallowed something. 2 hours later, she was taken ill and died, despite all the efforts of physicians to save her. The latter believed the poisonous insect caused her death.
Because I could not help but include this, I also found American reports from 1877 of an upcoming Parisian trial of a jealous husband who forced his wife to swallow a spider every morning as a punishment for her alleged flirting. Unfortunately, there were no follow-up reports on what happened to that psychopath. So we have gained a little bit of insight from newspapers.com that there was once a general feeling that swallowing spiders was a real problem for Americans. But I'm thinking we need to go back even further. Oftentimes, when we hear explanations about why we fear spiders in the first place, it has to do with millennia of evolution. Fear coded into our DNA from a time when we encountered innumerable dangers like venomous creatures, a phenomenon referred to as a biologically prepared fear. If something could harm us, we evolved over time to have a kind of implicit instinct to avoid it. This includes other potentially dangerous creatures, like snakes, as well as dangerous experiences, like darkness and heights. This biological preparedness fear theory could certainly be the source of our collective arachnophobia. There are several studies that provide compelling evidence for that. But when we start to look at other cultures around the world and the indigenous cultures that were present before colonization, spiders are sometimes held in extremely high esteem, as signs of good luck, as pets, as culinary delicacies, even as gods who created the universe. In addition, only 0.5% of all spiders are actually dangerous, with the greatest threats to early humans being predators like leopards, wolves, lions, bears, and hyenas. Yet phobias of those animals are nowhere near as common. I want to explore another theory, and remember, this is just a theory, and there are those who disagree with the conclusions, but I think it's worth bringing up in our context today. In a 1993 paper titled The Disgusting Spider, The Role of Disease in Illness and the Perpetuation of Fear of Spiders, written by UK psychologist Graham C.L. Davey, the author puts forward his theory that our fear of spiders is not biological, but instead a kind of learned behavior, instilled in us by the forces that raised us, family members, and our inherited cultures in general. Results of several studies have also shown that those who fear spiders are also more likely to fear other creatures that have never been dangerous to humans, like snails, worms, slugs, maggots, rats, and cockroaches. They are not predators, but they all evoked a similar response in participants, which Davey called disgust sensitivity, which other studies have suggested is a possible basis for the fear of spiders. Disgust at its core is a food rejection response, leading to a strong desire to move away from the object to avoid contamination, with a special desire to avoid whatever it is from getting into your mouth and thus into your body. According to Davey, these creatures possess one of the following three different qualities that give them their disgust-evoking status. By being directly associated with the spread of disease, like rats or cockroaches, by possessing features which resemble contamination stimuli, like mucus and feces, such as slugs and worms, or by being associated with disease and infection, like maggots. Davey points out that spiders don't seem to easily fit into any of these categories, so he puts forth another compelling theory that one of the most traumatic experiences in recorded history may have scarred Europeans and their ancestors so deeply that we are still living in the reverberations today. if we head back to one of the fucking worst places and times we could ever go, the Middle Ages, we find a veritable hellscape of famine, war, and most devastatingly, widespread bacteria and disease. Arachnids were developing a bad rep with the masses, who believed they absorbed different poisons around them from the various surfaces they climbed on. And there is evidence of the false association between spiders and sickness going all the way back to the 10th century. Up until the 20th century, if a spider skittered across your crust of bread or fell into your evening's soup, it was considered infected and promptly thrown out. Same went for the water buckets. Though there are almost no spiders in Europe that can kill with their venomous bites, there are still quite a few that cause mild symptoms and obvious marks. Lacking any sense of how illness in the human body operated, it was easy to imagine that these creatures were a true danger to human beings. So when the great plagues devastated regions all across Europe between the 1300s and the 1600s, Davy believes that spiders were cemented in the cultural consciousness as harbingers of horrific death to come to millions of human beings, a feeling that Europeans who came to America brought along with them. In the centuries since the Great Plagues, Western culture has been obsessed with cleanliness, with sanitation, with banishing germs and anything that reminds us of them, very much including the disgust-evoking creatures mentioned today. Swedish folklorist Bengtoft Klintberg posited that because our modern society has all but pushed spiders out of our modern homes and the rest of our urban environment, they have taken on mythical proportions. Our urban legend about spiders crawling into our sleeping mouths, along with the other tales we covered today, about spider eggs in bubblegum, about a spider laying eggs in a human cheek, about spiders nesting inside a hairdo, as well as the almost hysteria-like response to swallowing a spider at the turn of the 20th century, all of these share a sense that no matter how far we push spiders out of our lives, they will find a way to get to us, and even more frighteningly, a way to get inside us. It is in our sleep, that deep unconsciousness, that we remain most vulnerable, our jaws hanging slack. Maybe it's the same when we take what we hear as absolute truth, without the grueling work of constantly checking each and every source, whether these factoids be from chain emails of fun facts, novelty bottle caps, well-respected fact-checking sites with a secret propensity for pranks, or even a podcast that you might love. Of course, the examples of misinformation given today are pretty much harmless, but that won't always be the case. We may try our best to be truthful, but sometimes in the dark of our unconscious nights, something just a little bit insidious slips into our open mouths. This was American Hysteria. If you've got an urban legend that you want us to explore, go to AmericanHysteria.com and find our Urban Legends hotline. You can leave us a message about a story you remember from growing up, and we might just do an entire investigation about it. That's at AmericanHysteria.com, where you can also pick up some of our merch. If you want to support our show and get more of it, you can head to patreon.com/American Hysteria or subscribe on Apple Plus. You'll get ad-free episodes as well as bonus content like Hysteria Home Companion, my other podcast that I do with our producer, Miranda, where we tell you stories left out from our episodes or stories we just know that you'll love. That's patreon.com/American Hysteria or subscribe on Apple Plus. Another really great and free way to support our show is to leave us a 5-star review on the app of your choosing. It really helps us out, and it's very, very easy to do. American Hysteria is written, produced, and hosted by me, Chelsea Weber Smith. Our sound designer is Riley Swadelius Smith. Our producer is Miranda Zickler, and our voice actor is Will Rogers. Thanks, as always, for listening, and maybe you can join me in trying to learn to love some of the things that you fear. I hope you have a great week.